The White House rewrites a three-year-old bill to make spending data more transparent and accessible, and some open government advocates are less than happy with the administration's suggestions for the Senate's version of the Digital Accountability and Transparency Act, or DATA Act. Federal News Radio executive editor Jason Miller has an exclusive look at those recommendations. Jason, why does the White House want to change the bill so much, and what do they want to do to it?
Well, I think there's two areas that the White House is suggesting, recommending really significant changes or rewrites of the bill. I think the first one is the White House wants to move away from standards and toward what they call open data structures to publish information. Now, Senator Mark Warner, who's the author of the DATA Act, his bill calls for establishing government-wide financial data standards for all federal funds. Now, this includes common data elements for financial payment information. Standards should be maintained as well by a voluntary consensus standards body, federal agencies, and those who are in charge of contracting and financial assistance. So what he's saying is, let's come up with standards, let's all agree to them, and let's use them. But what the White House does, and they mark up the Senator Warner's bill, and we do have a link to that bill on federalnewsradio.com now, he shows major changes, including requiring OMB in consultation with the Treasury Department to, and this is key here, review and, if necessary, revise standards to ensure accuracy and consistency through methods such as establishing linkages between data and agencies' financial systems. So what they're saying there basically is, well, we'll look at it and decide. But we know, based on what's in the federal procurement data system, we know the grants aren't much better, that there are data standard problems and that the standards don't always mesh. And then, you know, one agency can call a contract, and you can call it a task order. But are we talking about the same thing? Well, we have to figure that out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other sticking point that really got people's ire up is around where that data will reside. And again, Senator Warner, who authored the bill, wants agencies to put all their data in USAspending.gov and to make it all downloadable in bulk. So that's financial data, procurement data, and grant data. Now, OMB makes two major changes, including not calling out USAspending.gov specifically to as the place where all this data should be held. Instead, they say, and this is a quote in their revisions, a site determined by the director of OMB. Now, what does that mean? Well, it could be in USA Spending, but it also could mean something else. And I think that also gets people concerned because, well, are they going to create a new site? And why wouldn't you want everything in one place?
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's some other changes around time frames, such as when the guidance should come out, when reports should be done, that are more minor. But overall, they are major recommendations for changes to this data act.
What is the reaction to the changes so far? I imagine not very good.
Not very good. There's a lot of concern, especially from Hudson Hollister, who's the founder and executive director of the Data Transparency Coalition. He's actually one of the original authors of the Data Act back in 2011. He says the basic purpose of the Data Act is gone from the OMB's markups because it hampers the two basic steps needed for data transparency, which are data standardization and an online accessibility in one place.
Unfortunately, OMB's revisions imperil both steps.
So talk to me a little bit about why do you think it imperils both steps?
Well, first, let's talk about data standards. OMB has rewritten the data standards provision so that it's not really about data standards at all. The word standards is still in there, but nothing else is. What do we mean when we talk about data standards? We mean that there have to be consistent government-wide identifiers for grants and contracts, grantees and contractors. And in the revised version from OMB, there is none of that. There's none of that specificity. And instead of anyone being required to set data standards government-wide for spending, the draft now says OMB shall review and revise, if necessary, standards for the consistency of data. That requirement could be met with an OMB memo. There's no requirement for consistent identifiers. There's no requirement for consistent formats anymore. Beyond that, the current Senate draft, as unanimously approved by the Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee, has a requirement for the agencies to follow the data standards. That's gone, too. In OMB's new draft, the agencies aren't actually required to do anything.
The one thing about this, let me just jump in real quick, is they're not calling for standards, but they are calling for open data. They are saying, please make it accessible. Now, I think no one would argue that standards are not important. I think everyone understands the importance of standards. But if the data gets released in a way that is through open architectures that can be easily pulled into APIs, isn't that just as good?
Sure, and that's a fair point. I look to what the President's Government Accountability and Transparency Board has said on this point. And in December 2011, the GATT board told the administration that transparency can't happen unless we have a government-wide identifier for awards, that is for grants and contracts. That recommendation still hasn't been implemented. That recommendation is definitely part of the Data Act, and in OMB's revisions, that recommendation is gone.
Now, Hollister says OMB's decision not to publish all the data in one place is also disconcerting. He says that without one main portal, citizens will miss out on one of the basic benefits of data transparency, and that's being able to see all the different information from whatever silo it comes from.
If you look at the revisions that OMB has made, they seem designed to make sure that OMB's current modes of reporting allocations and obligations will fulfill the legislative mandate. It appears to be a carve-out to make sure that no one has to build a comprehensive integrated source for all spending.
They do talk about objects, and they do talk about outlays and obligations. So is it the fact is that there could be a second site, but they don't mandate that only one site, which is USA Spending, should be used? Is that the bigger problem?
It looks as though it's vague enough that we could have information split between two or more. And if it's split, then there will be no obligation for the government to present all of the spending information in one place, integrated and fully searchable across those boundaries.
Now, again, we have a link to OMB's markup of the Data Act on federalnewsradio.com, as well as more comments from Hudson Hollister.
And this is a big transition that is being proposed, according to Mr. Hollister, so good that we have that information there.
I just want to be real quick, yes, be clear. These are just recommendations. Now,
yes.
Senator Warner, which we did reach out to, could or couldn't accept them. He may say, you know what, thanks OMB, I'm going to go my own way. Or he could say, oh, these are great, I'll use them all. But if he doesn't take those recommendations, or the majority of them, OMB may say, well, we're not going to support it, and then that bill dies.
Right,
well.
And it's interesting that this is coming in the wake of President Obama saying recently that he had a phone and a pen and he didn't need Congress. And obviously he's not trying to force something down their throats here, but I think it is interesting that you point out if the administration doesn't support the legislation, it's not likely to go anywhere. Also on federalnewsradio.com, Executive Editor Jason Miller, you are reporting on some more cybersecurity troubles at the Department of Veterans Affairs. What is going on there?
Well, the latest on cybersecurity concerns around VA and how they protect their data of the veterans and how they protect their systems comes from a new letter from Jeff Miller, the chairman of the House Veterans Affairs Committee, who's asking Eric Shinseki, the Secretary of Veterans Affairs, to answer 18 questions about the latest cyber breach that came to light, I guess, last week. Now, this was a memo that obtained by Federal News Radio, obtained by others in the community, that said that there was the e-benefits portal ended up with a cybersecurity breach. And basically what happened there was VA was updating their e-benefits portal, the software, and did it in a live production environment. Now, any software person will tell you, you can't update a system in a live production environment. You should do it in a testing environment,
yeah,
and then move it to production once you realize it doesn't break anything. Well, unfortunately for VA, they broke something where one veteran could log on and see another veteran's personal information.
Yes.
They think about 5,000 or so, about 5,500 veterans were affected. They're still going through that now. And what Jeff Miller, the congressman from Florida, wants to know is, how did it happen? Why did it happen? Who did it happen to? What are you doing to make sure it doesn't happen again? And we have a link to that letter on federalnewsradio.com as well.
I read one account of this where veterans were able to hit refresh, F5, and see a different veteran's information, not their own. So this was some kind of this was really broken pretty badly throughout this.
Absolutely. Remember, the e-benefits portal holds something like 3.8 million, almost 4 million people. So did it affect 4 million? It's hard to say. You hope not. Probably not. But did it affect more than 10,000? Well, I think that's what VA is trying to figure out.
I'm looking at this letter that we have linked at federalnewsradio.com, as you mentioned. It's Congressman Miller's letter to Secretary Shinseki. Question 5, given that 3.4 million veterans are registered within the e-benefit system, how has VA identified the number of users impacted to be only those using the system at a specific time? Then there are some A and B questions. One, A, B, and C. B is redacted.
Yeah, they said that was concerned. I was told by the committee that they redacted that because it would be a vulnerability that others could then take advantage of.
I see.
So they were worried that by making that public, that would hurt the eBenefits portal.
It could potentially indicate the vulnerability that caused the
right.
issue.
Now, this was a software update. This was not a software defect, but they were updating the software in a live environment. You know, a couple of other questions since you brought that up. I'll say, how are they going to prevent the same defect from happening again in the future? And again, how many, you know, again, who are they offering credit monitoring services to? And in some ways, they may have to offer it to all 3.4 million people. And that would be a huge cost to VA, because I think one of the things that the committee is worried about is, how can you tell who logged on and when, and for how long were they logged on for?
Well, I think the question I'd like to know the answer to most is question 18, the very last one. Did VA evaluate its response to the eBenefits defect to identify lessons learned and best practices as recommended by GAO and described in Memorandum 07-16? If yes, please tell us or provide additional details on how this was done and list of lessons learned. If no, please explain why not. I think that one will be the most interesting thing to take away. That seems to be the most forward-looking question of all of these that Chairman Miller wants answers to.
And I think one of the reasons why this letter does obviously point out is that this latest data breach, even if it's limited to 5,000 people, which is a lot, but it's not, you know, 26 million, which got us started down this cybersecurity path in 2006. The point is, this is just another piece to the puzzle of why VA is struggling with cybersecurity. And we've reported about this for over the last year or more, that there's been a growing list of problems about how VA can secure its data. For instance, the VA failed in 2013 for the 15th year in a row its consolidated financial statement audit regarding security controls. There was a report that we had got a copy of about from December 2012 showing veterans are at a higher risk of identity theft than the average citizen. So this just keeps adding to it, and it's all head scratching. Okay, what is really happening at VA? Or you know, why does Chairman Miller continue to feel like he's got to pound the drum to say, you know, General Shinseki, what's going on here?
It will be a busy week because at the Department of Veterans Affairs, because the responses, according to the deadline established by Chairman Miller, is Friday, January 31st, to get that information. And thank you, as always, Jason Miller, Federal News Radio Executive Editor.